This is a production by One and All Media. For more, head to oneandall.media.
When you apply the same test to the Bible that you apply to Homer's Iliad or any other great work of antiquity, the Bible stands on a plateau all by itself. In other words, if you can't trust the Bible to accurately reflect history, then you can't trust any book that's ever been written in antiquity.
Today
with Jeff Vines, pastor, apologist, and Bible teacher.
Welcome to another message from Pastor Jeff on Today with Jeff Vines. In this episode, Pastor Jeff is setting up the new series, Dirt Road Discipleship. He says the series is a journey into the heart of authentic faith. Today he's starting in John chapter 18, verse 37, and he's asking the question, what is truth? If you miss any episodes, you can find all messages in this series wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's begin the message now with Pastor Jeff.
In John chapter 18, verse 36, Jesus is before Pilate, and Pilate is questioning whether or not Jesus is claiming to be a king. And Jesus finally responds by saying, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders, but now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this, he went out again to the Jews, gathered there, and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him." When you're young and you're preaching, you don't mean it to be, but it's all about you. You want to know how you did. It's just natural. It doesn't mean you're selfish or a narcissist. It just means you're young and you're trying to find your way in the world, and you're nervous. In middle age, you settle down a little bit, you study, you read, and then one day the beauty of age hits you. You get old, and then you could care less about how you did. It's a beautiful thing because you change from what did they think about me. You mature if you're walking with Jesus, and now it's this. What is my responsibility before God? You see the difference? So I can entertain you, which is what I did in my 30s and 40s. I thought that's how you preached. I gotta tell you funny stories. I gotta tell you jokes or you won't like me. But then you get older and you're not even thinking in those terms anymore. You're thinking, I'm going to stand before God one day and give an account for everything I said on this stage. And what is he going to hold me responsible for? We start a movement. As you being part of that movement, this is going to be a hard sermon. I'm just going to get it out there. You're going to have to think. Now, I could just come out. I tried to associate this. I tried to rearrange it. But there's no easy way to do this, which means you're going to have to lean in. Especially the first two out of the series. You're going to have to think, why would I do this? Well, because something very special is happening around our world right now. There is a renewed spiritual hunger around the world. There's an emptiness and a searching. This year alone, Bible sales surpassed 14 million in the first 11 months. And usually when something increases 10%, we call that an epidemic. Well, Bible sales are up 20%. So there's an epidemic of spiritual hunger. Now the question is, and people are asking why. And some say, well, it's because of COVID. People recognize their own mortality. So now that they know there are no guarantees, they're looking for something to anchor their life to. Others say it's the death of trust. Other people say that now we can't trust the politicians. We can't trust the political world. We can't trust our leaders. We're being lied to, manipulated. Is there some kind of objective source that we can trust? Evidently, truth does matter. And the current generation may not be able to put all this together, but they are smart enough to know that there is an incoherency in a worldview that denies God and then claims hope and meaning are real. There's an incoherency of a worldview that claims there is no God and then turns around and claims there is objective hope and meaning. They're smart enough to know that you cannot have objective hope and meaning if there is no God. And they yearn for truth, meaning, purpose, and a sense of direction. So they're looking for an objective source, something that will guide them to tell them what is real, what is true, what can be trusted. Something that is not manipulation or a power play. Something that is just truth. Now, what does this mean for us? Well, first of all, it means that we live in a time of great opportunity. We have to take seriously the scripture that says you and I are supposed to be ready to give a reason for the hope that was within us. How many of you can explain why you believe what you believe in this room right now? If you were asked something more than I just feel this is true, which won't get you very far, this is the time that we speak the truth in love into culture. But it means that we have to understand how culture is thinking in order to contextualize the good news of the gospel into the current generation. Listen, folks, for me, I got a second wind about 10 years ago. I just got my third wind. And I've been waiting for this moment all my life. What's going on right now in culture? I just spent December in a studio in London answering questions for 2 hours, just one after the next. And as I sat there, faced those difficult questions that I was not given ahead of time, in hopes to give a response to a new generation seeking spiritual truth, I sat there on that stool and I thought, this is the reason for my life. Everything that's happened to me before this point is because of this time and this season, which means that if I am God's servant here, this is His church, not mine, I get it, but if I am His servant here, you're coming along this journey with me. Second, we live in a time of great ignorance. We do. I don't want to clobber you over the head with guilt. That is not my purpose. Because in the past, whatever happened in the past, I don't really care. What matters now is where are we going in the future? You and I must get to the point where we know what we believe and why we believe it. We must know what the central tenets of the gospel really are. And we must lead the way, not merely in experience, but in intellectual understanding, because this generation is going to ask you, what makes Christianity different than any other religion? What makes Jesus unique? Why should I believe the Bible is anything special? Can you answer those questions? Third, we live in a time of the counterfeit gospel. Here's the problem. The human tendency is to travel the road least resistant. So there will be many who begin to read the Bible, but without understanding, they will gravitate toward that which makes you feel good. It's just human nature. And the most popular form of Christianity in America, our unfortunate export, is that this good news of the gospel grants you everything and requires nothing from you. But that's not the gospel. So as we have this massive return to spirituality and a massive move back toward the Bible, there must be a concerted effort to what we call discipleship. What is discipleship? It's telling the truth about Jesus to everyone. It's what Jesus told the church to do during His ascension. In Matthew 28, Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." So our job is to teach the world everything Christ has commanded us. The question is, do you know what it is that Christ has commanded you? We'll say, "Well, Pastor Jeff, I would, but you haven't done a very good job of telling me." That's why we're doing the series. I take full responsibility. If you don't know, it's you haven't heard it here. So lean in for these next 8 weeks. Because in these next, you've got it. Listen, I would have given anything had my pastor preached a sermon like this when I was young. We don't preach sermons like this because they don't feel that good. And when you come to church, you want to have a spiritual high, and I'm all for that, and I want you to. But this is a season where you're going to have to engage your intellect just for a while. And here's what you're going to learn. When you engage your intellect and you really start to learn the truth, then it does impact the heart and the emotions for a longer period of time. A movement begins today And it all begins with a simple concept. Dirt road discipleship, step one, is the whole idea of truth. Because you and I find ourselves in a culture that does not believe in objective truth, that truth is relative, that everyone has to discover their own truth, and then without any kind of outside interference, you just live your truth and I'll live my truth. Now, if that is your definition of truth, you will not be able to follow Jesus. When you come to something that's difficult or counterculture and you believe that you can determine your own truth, then you will deconstruct and reconstruct whatever Jesus teaches to fit your preferred worldview. That's your truth. And this is what it means to create Jesus in your own image. You tell Jesus what he ought to be like, rather than asking the question, what is Jesus truly like? And as we disciple the next generation, it has to begin with you and I affirming that we believe, one, that truth is objective, that there are things that are true whether you believe them to be or not. Two, that truth is discoverable, that there is a way to discover what is true and what is false. And ultimate truth, origin, meaning, morality, destiny, are discovered in Jesus Christ and the gospel. This is the reason Jesus said in John 14, 6, Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. First, truth is objective. I don't know if you were watching. Did anybody watch any of the debates, presidential debates? Well, I watched, and there was one particular debate that happened on CNN between three Democrats and one token Republican. And so, now, come on, that was funny. It's a little bit funny. So, in the debate, the token Republican said, well, I can't go with Kamala Harris because she keeps talking about my truth and your truth and their truth. And as soon as I heard her say that, I could not follow her because there's no such thing as your truth and my truth. There's only the truth. The person debating her immediately quipped in, and I had to laugh, and said, that's not true. Oh, you get it. You just affirmed what he said, because as soon as you say, that's not true, you're affirming an objective truth. The absence of categoric truth makes life unlivable. Think about it. If there is no God, objective moral values don't exist. If you can live by, listen now, if you can live by your truth and I can live by my truth, who are you to tell the Hutus that they did the wrong thing when they slaughtered a million Tutsis? Who do you think you are to tell Hitler that he was wrong in slaughtering 6 million Jews? Who are you to tell anybody that slavery is wrong if you live by your truth and I live by my truth? Without objective truth, life is unlivable. We assume God when we assume anytime you tell somebody that they ought to do something else, you assume God because you assume absolute moral law to give you absolute definitive categories of good and evil, and only God can give you that kind of moral law. What do we mean then when we say objective truth? We mean this. A truth exists independently of individual perception or opinion and is true for everyone regardless of their beliefs or perspective. In other words, if it's 78 degrees outside, it doesn't matter that you feel it's 50. It's still 78. It doesn't matter if you feel the earth is flat. The earth is round, no matter what you feel. Sometimes I'll be playing golf with my buddy Rick Reed, and I'll say to Rick, that felt like a birdie. And he'll remind me, it might have felt like a birdie, but it's a par. I'm going to write 4 down on the scorecard. Imagine a pilot who says, I know these are laws, there are laws of aerodynamics, but I just think a plane should be able to fly without wings. You gonna get on the plane? We call that insanity. What one thinks or feels does not correspond to reality. So for some reason, many people will admit that objective reality exists, but as soon as they began discussing the topic of God, faith, religion, and especially Christianity, suddenly objective truth goes out the window. Why? Because of two misconceptions. You with me? Come on. Number one, the misconception that religion is totally based on feeling and is no way related to anything factual. Faith, the way they defined it, is blind belief. Nowhere in the Bible is faith defined as blind belief. In fact, the most famous passage describing faith, Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is the substance. There's something real of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Not enough sermons are preached on Hebrews 11:1, but basically what the writer's telling us, based on the substance of thing I know to be true, I can trust things in the future for what I am not presently certain. Based on the substance of what I see here, the fact of what I see here, I can trust things for which I do not have certainty. Second, if objective truth does exist, we're told, concerning God and His Son, Jesus Christ, this culture, this generation will tell us that such truth is unknowable because God is not knowable. So they will say, okay, Pastor Jeff, objective truth exists, but you'll never know it. You'll never know what it really is. All right, here lies the rub. When you begin to open the Bible, you do so, this next generation does so, to discover truth. They're looking for something to anchor their lives, something that will give them certainty regarding origin, meaning, morality, destiny, and hope. And that's exactly what the Bible does. The Bible claims to be the revelation of God to us. Romans 1, Paul says, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what made me known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made so that people are without excuse. Paul is saying, we don't merely feel that God exists. His existence is based upon facts. And the number one fact is the logic of first cause, which means something doesn't come from nothing. You look out and you see the wonderful creation, the vastness of the galaxies, the depths of the oceans. And this is not something that can just appear without a first cause. Atheistic evolution is an objective falsehood. Something coming from nothing is not science. It is a doctrine concocted by those who deny the objective truth of God's existence. And it's downright ridiculous, no matter how many letters come after your name. Christianity is not based on feeling, but reality. What reality? The first reality, that God exists. He is the only plausible explanation for the universe. And the second reality, that He has chosen to reveal Himself in creation, general revelation, the invisible qualities, His eternal power. And then, particular to the Christian faith, God has chosen to reveal Himself in the person of Jesus Christ. We call that special revelation, validated by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You with me? Which is why the writer in Hebrews, we'll get to some of the questions you're thinking right now. I can just feel it. Minds are spinning. In Hebrews chapter 1, in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, He has spoken to us by His Son, whom He appointed heir of all things and through whom also He made the universe. So, what we're being told is that the way God has chosen to reveal Himself is not only through creation, general revelation, but through special revelation. Emmanuel, God with us, His Son, Christ, coming to planet Earth, and to validate, to affirm that this is the Son of God, He did something nobody else did. He rose from the dead. Now, according to the Christian faith, the resurrection of Jesus Christ is a historical reality. It happened in real time and space. It is not metaphorical. It is actual. And the belief is, since the resurrection of Jesus Christ is historically true, we can now affirm that God has revealed Himself in the person of Jesus Christ and that Jesus Christ is truth. You see how valuable this is? If Jesus Christ did rise from the dead, then He is the Son of God. Therefore, everything He says is true. He is the way. He does not show you the way. He is the way. He is the truth. Regardless of what you feel, when your life contradicts His word, you're the one in the wrong. He is the life. Life is found in Him. Now, here's what someone says. The skeptic says, oh, yes, Jeff, I hear, but here's the problem. How can I know that Jesus rose from the dead? And by the way, while we're at it, how can I even trust that the Bible is true? You see? Fair enough. Because everything we know about Jesus primarily comes from the Bible. Now, there are outside resources that corroborate, but not a lot. And everything you know about what Jesus taught and what he did comes from the Bible. So if you can't trust the Bible, game's over. So the question is, now that we agree that objective truth exists, how can we know with a level of certainty the truth about God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit and our lives? So first of all, what do we mean by truth? Let's go back to this. Truth is understood in terms of reality. So a proposition, now this is the point of the message, right here's the point where I might lose you. So lean in, and then I promise you I'll pick you up again. I keep going back to truth because when we talk about truth, truth is understood in terms of reality. A proposition is said to be true if the statement reflects what actually happened. Got it? So a belief is true if it matches up with the way things actually are. See, where people get in trouble is they think they can't believe in something unless you can believe it without the slither of any doubt. An exhaustive understanding is limited to God. We're finite creatures. But what we do ask is, where does the evidence point? Our legal system uses that every time there's a court case. We ask the simple question. They use the phrase beyond reasonable doubt. They assume that you're never going to know 100% what actually took place because you weren't there. But through eyewitness accounts and circumstantial evidence, you can make a wise deduction that the evidence seems to point here. When determining the truth or falsehood of someone's guilt or innocence, prosecutors often present oral testimony, eyewitness accounts, and forensics to the jury, challenging each person to pronounce guilt or innocence based on the direction the evidence points. Which means that truth, remember we live in a generation that says, okay, truth may exist objectively, but it's impossible to know it with certainty. Truth is knowable and discoverable through knowledge learned and knowledge given. So when we're determining whether or not something is true, here's what we do. First, stay with me now. There is propositional knowledge. Knowledge that something is factual beyond reasonable doubt because the evidence points in this direction. So Christ followers believe the Bible is the Word of God because of the overwhelming evidence that points in this direction. It's not blind belief. We just don't pick up the Bible and say, this is from God. How do you know? I just feel it. If that's the answer you give, no. Now, for me personally, we're going to do a whole message on the Bible, but just quickly, for me personally, when I took this little journey in my crisis of faith in my mid-20s, you learn things that no archaeological find has ever controverted a biblical reference. You learn that when the test of authenticity are applied to works of literary antiquity, the same test applied to the Bible, that because there are so many manuscripts of the Bible far exceeds any literary work of antiquity. In other words, if you can't trust the Bible to accurately reflect history, then you can't trust any book that's ever been written in antiquity. When you apply the same test to the Bible that you apply to Homer's Iliad or any other great work of antiquity, the Bible stands on a plateau all by itself. And no matter what you hear, and sometimes what people may say, the Bible that you're reading today is an accurate reflection of what was originally written. Now, we'll go into that in detail, but just for now, you can trust that what you're reading is what was originally written.
You've been listening to Today with Jeff Vines. Thanks for joining us. Next time, we'll bring you the rest of this message from Pastor Jeff.
There's a lot of things that you don't prove scientifically. You prove them by legal historical proof, eyewitness and circumstantial evidence. How do you know that World War I and World War II occurred? You weren't there. How do you know? You rely on two things. You rely on the testimony of those who've written the account, and that applies to the Bible in the sense that, can we trust the authors who wrote the history of Jesus? And two, the circumstantial evidence.
You can listen to more messages like this. Just search for Today with Jeff Vines wherever you get your podcasts. You make me want to dance and sing with every single breath I breathe. I will break this offering. You are my wonder. You make the wonder.
Today.
Today.
Today. Today with Jeff Vines.
This is a production by One and All Media. For more, head to oneandall.media.